friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I just want to bring myself and my guest back to the 10th of March. And in Tourism Ireland office, there was a lovely round table discussion, and here we were, everything was, going to be fine, and that was it. Now, that the head of that group is Niall Gibbons, and he's actually got a very kind of worthy and high-focused job, in the sense that whereas the government of Ireland, to worry about the island of Ireland and the UK and all the rest of it, a lot of people throughout the world are not are either not that interested or have bigger stuff on their plates, to be concerned. And then there is the best known, and I say this in all seriousness, the best known Irishman throughout the world having to do with Ireland, and that is my friend, Niall Gibbons. Niall, you're very welcome.
Adrian, it's lovely to be on the show again. Only so sorry that I can't be over there in New York, but you're very kind in your introduction, as always. I'm certainly by no means the most famous in any way, but it's great to be talking to you again, and thank you for all the great work that you've done on behalf of the Irish community over in the USA.
Niall, thank you for that. But let's just start at March 10th. At a time when we were so, geared up for yet another marvelous St. Patrick's Day, you were here, and again, you would have covered Washington and, a lot of areas in that trip. But we were sitting down. My God, nobody could foresee the devastation that was actually coming around the corner. It was there, except nobody told us about it. But it was an amazing experience. And I think, when we look back on our programs, throughout now more than 50 years, this one was very significant in the sense that we didn't know whether we were coming or going, but actually on the 10th of March, everything was shaping up to be banner year for tourism for Ireland, even tourism to New York. We didn't know that the hatchet was about to fall. But can you bring us back to that that meeting and the guests that you had brought over from Ireland to bear good tidings?
Sure, well, I remember it really well because we had our Minister for Tourism, Diane Dodds, from Northern Ireland over, along with Howard Hastings, who's the biggest hotelier in Northern Ireland, the Chief of Northern Ireland Tourism, John McGrillan, and the Chief of Belfast Tourism, Gerry Lennon. And we sat down and we did an interview on the 10th of March, and it's fair to say we were aware this virus was knocking around because I had been dealing with it since January when our Chinese operation had to be wound down temporarily, we thought. And I think, Adrian, I came into tourism just at the back end of 9/11, and I've been through many crises since, but it's fair to say that if someone gave you a blank page at the beginning of 2020 and said, well, you're right at the worst case scenario for me, I don't think anyone could have written out this one. This is really, there's no words to describe the decimation and devastation, particularly on the hospitality industry, and indeed on society as well, who effectively have been locked up indoors. With all sorts of difficult stories to tell when the time comes. But on the 10th of March, we were looking forward to a good year for tourism on the back of what's been a bumper year in 2019, and no one foresee it coming. But by the 13th of March, I was back in Dublin. Our reception at the White House had been postponed, and things had really wound down, and we went into full lockdown in Ireland at the end of March. It was just incredible, really.
Now, but it did introduce you, as it happens with so many of us, to to home cooking, which, you know, you didn't avail of for what, but now 18 years. Different, as you faced the reality of where you stood as head of tourism, tourism throughout the world, that must have been, it must have had a couple of sleepless nights with that, because this was changing, the world was changing every hour.
Yeah, you're right, Adrian. I think we witnessed the essentially the unraveling of the industry that month of the latter part of March and the first half of April was quite a scary one. We were in constant contact with all the sector leaders, everything from the hotels to visitor attractions to bars to restaurants and airlines and airports, and it was just something that we never thought we would see would happen. We've been used to seeing a crisis occur in markets from time to time. You could have a terrorist attack, you could have a some sort of a minor pandemic which can impact on one market, but you'd never have the whole globe impacted in the way that we did. So when you see businesses starting to close and put staff on furlough or on layoff schemes, it starts to become very worrying, and fear starts to creep in, and insecurity, because people can't see an end in sight. And things definitely did improve. Ireland handled the virus very well, and that we moved to shut down quickly, and we got the message across on social distancing and hand hygiene and sneezing and coughing hygiene. And by the middle of May, certainly by end of May, we were at a point where the virus had almost been extinguished, and society started to open up again, and that was really encouraging. And I think there was a great sense of emotion that people could connect again and visit homes and families and start travel domestically. And the domestic season here, from a tourism perspective, was actually reasonably quite good. We didn't move on the international travel for obvious reasons. But now what we're seeing across the globe now is a sort of a second wave of infections, and a lot of countries like ourselves, the UK, across Europe now, just talking to all my colleagues in Tourism Ireland, have seen more restrictions being brought in, and hopefully we can get this virus under control again in the short term.
Start with, 2019, with these more than 11 million overseas visitors to Ireland, and that was about as has happened since going back to your first taking over the tourism industry worldwide. That was an amazing, putting aside for the moment the money, and of course delivering almost 6 billion euro to the country. My God, it was banner years were, it was amazing. Just every year, particularly from North America, we saw the numbers absolutely zooming,
It was amazing, Adrian, and I think I was on the show a number of times during those years, in 2018 and 2019 particularly, and we saw on both years 11.2 million people come to Ireland, and given you have a population of about 6.7 million, it puts it in perspective. Yeah, as you say, the spend was about 6 billion euros, so that's a lot, and the employment is the most important thing. Tourism and hospitality employs approximately 10% of the workforce, and it's not all tied up in big cities like Dublin or Belfast. It's spread into every small rural town and village in every county across the whole island of Ireland. So I think that's where it really has been felt now during the course of 2020, is that in small villages around Ireland, and I saw it myself with my own eyes when I went out on domestic vacations this year, was that we really missed the American visitor, particularly along places like the West Coast, particularly along our golf courses and our airports and our bed and breakfasts. It's something that was really a stark reminder of the importance of international tourism, because while the domestic market held up well this year, it only accounts for about a quarter of the spend. So you essentially are taking three quarters of all your activity out by having no international visitors. But we have kept in touch with our people, and our technology has proved to be really wonderful. I mean, I think the online platforms now for video conferencing have been so successful that we have been able to do a lot of virtual meetings with our suppliers over in the States. The really heartening thing about our U.S. customers is that most of them haven't canceled their holidays. They've actually just postponed them into 2021. So, I mean, I'm confident that we'll be back on the road at some point in the near future, and we look forward to welcoming people back to Ireland when the time is right. But certainly the good news is that most people have just postponed to next year and not cancelled the holiday, which is very reassuring.
It definitely is. And that there was a meeting yesterday evening of, the government, and of course you had the Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, also the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, a name that we got to know through the years, Leo Varadkar. Minister for Tourism, again, Catherine Martin, and, you know, a number of, and word, you know, through the grapevine is that you're like the Christ child in the temple there. But it was a meeting ahead on to do something and perhaps get the message across, you know, which many of us didn't know, is that that everybody wants to get to Ireland. They're not cancelling out. They haven't stroked it off. And can you tell us about that meeting? And who and what did this meeting was accomplished here? Start with the
meeting was the National Tourism Forum, and it's the first of a series of meetings that will be taking place. And it was attended by Leo Varadkar, who is the Cornerstone, and also the Minister for Business and Minister for Tourism, Catherine Martin. And it was a forum of all the sector leaders, essentially the people who are the sector leaders for the hospitality industry in Ireland. And there was an opportunity for the two ministers to listen to feedback from the sectors as to how they're faring through the coronavirus pandemic, and really to take on board the concerns in advance of the annual budget statement, which will take place next week. So it was a really good session. They listened very carefully to the various, I suppose, survival strategies that the various industry leaders are trying to find their way through as they face into a more difficult winter period. Because in our industry, as you can appreciate, the summer season tends to be very busy, and that's when the industry fatten up for a leaner winter. But this summer, there wasn't much pickings, so to speak, so it's going to be a lean summer and a lean winter, and it's important that we do everything that we can. And we learned a lot from the global financial crisis 10 years ago as well. You know, we had to survive a crisis before, but this one is just much bigger. So I think it's important that we hold together, that we hold out some hope, and that we support all the sectors as best we can. And when the time is right, Tourism Ireland will be out there in the international marketplace. That was my message today, with a new campaign to encourage people to come. And we also commented at that meeting as well on the market research that we've been conducting in the marketplace to see how the consumer is faring through the pandemic. And what our customers are telling us, particularly in the United States, is that, you know, Ireland is still well up at the top of their list. But obviously internationally, people are still a little bit nervous about international travel. They're afraid of getting, you know, stuck at a location. They're afraid of catching the virus, bringing it home. Financial security issues are on their mind. So we really need to get to a point where, you know, we're post-COVID and people are feeling confident again. But when they are traveling again, the one bit of good news I was able to deliver is that they have got Ireland right up there at the top of their list. They're looking to go and visit friends and relatives. People are looking to visit the familiar, and that's, you know, really good for the sort of future of Irish tourism for the next 3 to 5 years.
Of course, we would like to acknowledge again the tremendous success from North America, an amazing team headed, by Alison Metcalf, and the devastation that the tourism industry, you know, felt here was actually you know, we were getting used to it. But can you address the impact that it had, you know, throughout the world, and maybe start with that China, you know, tourism, which was very significant in the midst of you know, of all of this. What was, and how is that decision reached that, okay, we have to start here? Was it just coincidental with the times that were in it, or when did that bell go off that we better start with China?
Well, in my world, I was looking back over some old emails, and my first communications in relation to coronavirus was back in the middle of January, when it became apparent that this COVID-19 was having an impact in China. And that's become obviously a new important tourism market for Ireland. We've been working very hard on it the last number of years. We've succeeded in getting some direct flights from Beijing. But we had a big sales mission that was due to go out at the end of February. And I think it was about the 23rd of January I had to make the call, do we go or not go? And I made the call that Friday evening that we'd postpone. And that was a big sort of policy decision to make. I'm glad that we made it. And it was clear then that China was in a position where it was deteriorating. And by the end of February, I was over in mainland Europe in Paris, and we were picking up signals that people were starting to postpone trips and there were no shows at airports, and it was a sufficient concern for me to say there's something not right here. And that was the second chapter. And the third chapter was when I met you over in the United States, and it became clear that this was much more of a global pandemic than we had imagined. But I can tell you the impact on the global travel industry is immense, because in a typical year, about 1.4 billion trips are taken around the globe. And the spend in hospitality is about $1.7 trillion. And that's expected to decline by about 80% this year, which means that there are 300 million people in hospitality around the globe whose livelihoods have been on the line. It's been very tough for them. So there are a lot of people that are looking to get back when the time is right to do so, and to get back traveling again and get back to a normal life. But I think this is one thing that we'll learn from the scale of this global pandemic is the size and importance of the hospitality industry and the role that it plays in making people happy.
I'm sure that Ireland is not that much different from the United States in the sense that just about every sector here is looking to the government. First of all, looking for their attention, and even more important, making sure that not only is the government aware, but that the hospitality industry needs money. They need it now. They need help. End of story. And that's not something that can wait until next year.
Yeah, and I'd say in fairness, I mean, there was a survival package put in place very quickly here by the Irish government and also in Northern Ireland too by the executive, which really core to that was actually to ensure that the employee maintained their relationship with their employer. So a wage subsidy support scheme was put in place. That was very helpful. There was a reduction in VAT or sales tax. There were a number of reliefs from certain other taxes where you were able to delay payments of certain other taxes. So there have been a lot of liquidity measures introduced, and the government will run a big budget deficit this year as well, which will just put more liquidity into the marketplace. I think it's important to recognise as well why there are some sectors that are having real difficulties. So hospitality is probably the industry that's been the worst affected by this pandemic. And there are other sectors here in Ireland that are doing quite well. So medtech, pharma, IT have actually seen expansion. Exports have been expanding this year. So the original forecast by the Central Bank in Ireland of a reduction in GDP of maybe 10% has now been revised downwards, that GDP may decline by only about 1% this year. So I think actually what we've seen is that a very worrying situation at the beginning, while it's still worrying, it's not as bad as it might have been, if that makes sense, and thanks to certain sectors who have been able to, you know, keep the show on the road. And hopefully in time, and hopefully it won't be long, when the hospitality sector comes back, it'll bounce back very strong, because I think there's a big pent-up demand out there. People have spent a lot of time at home, which has been nice to spend time with their families and get back to basics sometimes, but people will be looking to travel and look for new experiences. Particularly, I think there's going to be a big emotional draw to visiting friends and family that we haven't been able to see, and that's very much an Irish thing as well. There are a lot of people around the world, 70 million that claim Irish ancestry, and I think a lot of them are going to be looking to come home to visit their families when all this is said and done.
Niall Givens, I want to ask you, maybe you can fill us in on it, on some details with respect to, you know, the tourism recovery plan that's actually, you know, this will go on from, from 2020 with the long view of taking it to 2023. The forum itself, which of course is sponsored by the government, but that places you, and not just you alone, but so many sectors, you know, of the tourism industry, that it's incredible, and it gives everybody a chance to know what is happening without having to read it in newspapers or hear whatever is going on. For instance, you have the Irish Hotel Federations, the Restaurants Association of Ireland, and the Vintners, obviously, the Federation of Ireland. So many sectors. So nobody is left out. This forum is indeed going to be, it will have an instant impact, going forward, so that's also brand new as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important at a time of crisis that we communicate with each other. And one thing that we've established very well in the hospitality sector is a capacity to work together and support each other. So I think both the report of the Tourism Recovery Task Force this week that was with the government have outlined a number of measures that they'd like to see implemented over a 3-year period. And the new forum is really a way for, I suppose, a listening post for ministers to hear it firsthand from the sector leaders how they can sort of take measures to government to support the sector. And it was really appreciated. It was a very good meeting. And I think to have our former minister, Leo Varadkar, who is now the Deputy Prime Minister, and our new Tourism Minister, Catherine Martin, together, showed that there was an element of solidarity at government level as well to support the sector as best they could. And there is a recognition as well, Adrian, that I think the hospitality sector is the worst hit, and it may take the longest to recover. So I think they're very keen to ensure they can put in place whatever support measures they can to help the sector. So I think people took a lot of encouragement despite the really difficult times. I think these are times when you need to find a bit of hope, I suppose, and realise that there are people at the centre of power who are listening to the needs of the sector. And, I think from a Tourism Ireland perspective, it's important for us abroad to keep the lights on for Ireland, because the easiest thing to do is to cut back and say nothing. But you may have seen on some of our social media channels, we've been as active as ever with a very much a dream now, travel later message, which is getting great traction, I have to say, and great reaction around the world, and that people are very keen to get to Ireland. And we're really hopeful that by, maybe the early next year, when travel picks up again, we can get a new campaign out there on from Fill Your Heart with Ireland. But for now, it's really keeping Ireland in the mindset of the consumer, so that when they do want to travel, that Ireland is number one on their list.
And, during the period where there were constant, lockdowns being added every day, with tourism all over the world, sometimes even at the airport before another restriction was put in place. What about the domestic travel in Ireland, and how successful was that? We know that for instance, you have incentives that were very attractive for those who were in Ireland.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the domestic year was very good because people were staying at home. I think for a lot of people who would typically travel abroad to the sun, they found a new way of looking at Ireland because they had to engage with it. We found that coastal counties did very well. So the Wild Atlantic Way Counties like Donegal had one of the highest occupancy rates in the whole country. Wexford was very good too, Mayo and Galway, Kerry. Self-catering sector did very well. People are more keen to be in sort of in their own home, if you know what I mean. So they're keen to sort of rent a house or a villa. They're keen to be in open space. So they like the beach. Places that were more urban weren't as popular. So as you'd expect with this particular virus, it's changed people's perceptions. They don't want to be in crowded spaces. There are no festival events on. They want to be where they're going to be safe. So self-catering would have done very well, caravan and camping, anywhere near sort of beach, open space, walking, cycling, swimming, all those types of activity holidays were really, really popular. So that was encouraging. I found, on a funny note, I went on a bit of a golfing trip with my brother down to Kerry. We got a great welcome. It was great to do. And because we didn't have any Americans, it was very easy to get a tea time. So maybe that was one of the upsides of the whole thing this year. We really, really missed our visitors from North America. But I was able to play some of the top golf courses in Kerry, where they would all assemble from the United States from April onwards.
and meanwhile, I couldn't help there but reflect on what was going on here on our side. And a realistic figure is 90, we're up to 96% of the tourism to New York City. You know, we're down 96%. That's, my God, you know, if we're at the point here where if there's any tourists in New York City, they probably lost their way.
I think that was an international phenomenon, so not just in New York, but places like London, Paris, Rome. I've seen photographs of famous landmarks that you wouldn't be able to get into during the summer. But it's just really, it's almost spooky to see the photographs of just no visitors at all in places like St. Peter's Square or Place de la Concorde and you know, Trafalgar Square. And Dublin city centre was quiet during the summer as well. But certainly the rest of the country had quite a good summer with a lot of domestic visitors.
Niall, in keeping our listeners and indeed those on social media informed as to what is going on, there's an added bonus, and that is that we are getting almost on a daily basis a great bird's eye view of Ireland and loads of information. You know, when things are very good, and we know this from, you know, it's not peculiar to Ireland, but when things are going absolutely fine, a lot of people feel that they know pretty much what it is that they would be interested in. But the marketing during this period is such a service, really, to people, to those. The level of interest in Ireland has skyrocketed, and that's a tremendous bonus, you know, for people in the United States that sometimes might feel they'd never see Ireland again or whatever. It's fabulous. It really is.
Well, you're very kind. We have got a very good reaction to it, and I think, you know, compared to a decade ago when social media was in its infancy, the world has really changed now from an advertising perspective. We haven't been engaging in paid advertising since early March when COVID really started to take a grip, so you wouldn't see our ads on TV or hear them on the radio. But we have been pushing out video content, and what we found is some of the traffic this year has actually been busier than last year because people are at home more, they're searching more online for things that are of interest to them, and there's been really good pickup in Ireland, which I suppose reinforces the point that, you know, look, the interest in coming here is very strong. I think people are clamoring to connect. I mean, the word wholesome reconnection came through in our market surveys quite a bit. People are keen to find their families again. They're keen to see them. Technology is wonderful in that it delivers us video platforms that we can keep in touch with each other much better, but it never replaces the real thing. And I think, you know, as soon as people can get going again, they'll be very keen to connect with the familiar, to connect with their families and get back home. Tourism and hospitality really will benefit from that.
You know, Niall Gibbons, again, first of all, you're very welcome. And news hot, you know, off the presses with respect to yesterday's meeting again, give people, you know, the assurance, and particularly those who have postponed their visits to Ireland, give some, you know, really some tremendous, you know, benefit in knowing that with all of the other industries that are very, very essential to tourism, the airline industry, you know, the tremendous number of services that tourism depends on, people are availing of that right now, and it doesn't, it seems to me like it would be hard to beat the, you know, the deals that, that people can get right now without the worry of whether or not there will be a further postponement. It's great.
Yeah, I think another key factor as well in our success with the United States over the last 10 years, and hopefully we'll see it in the next number of years again in such strong form, is the air connectivity. I should have mentioned that earlier because, you know, obviously we know the traditional gateways like Boston, New York, Chicago will always be served, and still are being served, by the way, from with Aer Lingus from a cargo perspective and also for people coming back for essential reasons. But, I mean, if you look at the success of Irish tourism over the last number of years, real expansion and real success has come with new gateways from the likes of Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Miami, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Charlotte, Dallas as well. So it really has been fantastic to see that new connectivity coming in. And while it has been lost in 2020, I hope we can really rebuild that network, and we'll be keen, and we have been keeping in touch with the carriers who I know are very keen to get back to Ireland as well. But the connectivity is just incredible. There's more connectivity in the air from the United States to Ireland than there is into a big country like Germany, which is amazing.
Good news. And you being the bearer of good news, we're delighted to again have you as part of our program. As a matter of fact, there are no other guests. We had to shelve a couple of them because this is big news. It's great. It is positive, and I want to thank you for bringing it to us.
Well, I'm delighted to be on the show. I think I first appeared on your show in St. Patrick's Day of 2006. And I've been appearing since, so not as long as the 51 years, but I'm catching up on you, Adrian, and it's always great to be back on the show to connect with people.
Okay. There is one place to go. We make it very, very simple for anybody, wherever you're listening to us, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. It is Ireland.com. Ireland.com. And you can get information, of course, up to date in 29 market sites, and available, by the way, in 11 languages. It's amazing. 23 million visitors to your website in 2019.
That's correct. Yeah, Ireland.com is the place to go for any information in relation to getting here, getting around, where to stay, what to do, what to see, hiring a car, all that sort of information. And for people who are in the United States, obviously there's a dedicated US site. But in all the markets which we operate around the world, I mean, our big markets, for example, would be the likes of the United States, Britain, France, Germany. But we're also in places like Spain, Italy, Belgium, Middle East, Dubai. We also cover China, Australia, New Zealand. And then we have websites for places where we don't have representation, so places like Brazil, which is important from an education perspective, Portugal as well, and a couple of other places like that. So, yeah, we've got a good spread. I mean, it just shows the importance of tourism and hospitality. Our top four markets of Great Britain, the United States, France, and Germany account for about 70% of our visitors. But it's good to have a mixed portfolio of markets, and it's been great to see that diversity come into tourism over the last number of years. But the big star of Irish tourism over the last decade has been the United States, where we've seen numbers double from 1 million to 2 million. So that's really encouraging, and we look forward to getting back to that again in 2021.
Thank you. Thanks. Always a pleasure. And, you know, I want to keep this on a level without becoming parochial. So we won't mention the fact that actually you're a transplant from Mayo, and, you know, but as chief executive of Tourism Ireland, worldwide, there's no need to bring up Mayo at all.
Well, I think at this stage, Adrian, we won't get to mention the All-Ireland because I'm not quite sure if it's going to get played this year. But I do have to, if you have time for me to tell my little Mayo story, because it's a great, you know, my family connections. My father's side of the family are from Mayo. And following a death of an uncle this year, I have been dabbling in the family tree a little bit just to do some research into the ancestry, which for many people in Ireland it's a big thing. And for many people in the United States who have traveled in the last 100, 150 years, they do like to find the family tree, go back to see where they came from. And you're obviously going back in time. But for me, my story was really, my ears perked up when I heard that we had ancestors from Mayo that went out to the United States, and we never knew anything about them. And my elderly aunts, who are 85 and 90, knew that they went out. So the online records are now so good in the space that, I mean, I was able to go back and find, these relatives were from Kilchuma in Mayo, and it was Thomas Brennan and Sarah Solon were their names, and they had 11 children. And the youngest one, Margaret, was my grandmother, but her sisters headed off to New York in 1910, aged 27 and 17. So I was able to find the record of them arriving in Ellis Island, and I thought that was the end of the story for me because I wouldn't be able to get any further.
Yeah.
But I actually posted the story up online on LinkedIn and on Facebook and Twitter, and I had, I think it was about 20,000 views of the story. It's amazing the intrigue of the diaspora and the connections. And just through a connection in New York, you know him, John Riley, the lawyer. He had a relative in Sligo who was a genealogist, and I was able to make the connections, and I got to have a Zoom conversation with my second cousins in New Jersey. So I learned that my great aunt Annie Brennan, who travelled over to the States, never got back to Ireland again. She was 17 when she left, and she had five children, one who died in World War One, one who died young, but she had three daughters. And they went on to have children there, so I've connected with them on Facebook, and it's nice to have a diaspora story where you find a living as opposed to chasing back in time, tracing relatives who have deceased. So it's nice to see the Givenses and the Brennans out there became Nearies and Pillars and Whalens, and they all seem to be doing very well in New Jersey, so a big hello to all of them.
Thank you. We join you in saying hello to that motley crew, every last one of them. Grace, again, a terrific exercise, and I know a lot of people are, going part way, but you just decided you were going to... You won't tell us, of course, about any scurrilous characters that showed up in your, scoundrels and those. Did you just kind of shout those? Did you do we?
I can assure you, Adrian, there are no scoundrels in Mayo whatsoever.
I'm glad you mentioned that because we wouldn't want to drag down the home county. Listen, it's great, and keep the good news coming. We can use every bit of it. Niall Givens, my friend. Thank you. God bless.
Adrian, thanks for having me on the show, and it's great to talk to you again. And to everybody out there in the United States, stay safe and stay well, and look forward to seeing you over there in person very soon, and look forward to welcoming you all back to Ireland.
Thank you.